Okay, here we go. Move the mic a little bit. Thanks, everybody. Welcome again. Today is Wednesday, June 12th, 2024. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you're having a great day. Just the only real announcement today is we're still looking for a few more practitioners, or maybe one. To join our new biology clinic. So if you're an MD or DO or maybe a naturopath ND and you've been studying new biology principles and think you're ready to take this on, send us a cover letter and a resume to the customer service people and we'll take a look. And again, thanks everybody for their interest. There was a interview that three of the doctors at the clinic and myself did with the Solari report. So if anybody wants to check out some of the ways that we think and what some of the stuff that we're doing, you could check out the interview that I believe was posted today on the Solari report. I think that's Solari.com. Okay, I think that's it. Let me just check. Yeah, I don't think there's any other announcements or updates. The only other thing, this is a very exciting time for the sorry, no virus team. I think those of you who follow the Way Forward Alex X channel will see an interview with Jamie Andrews that Alex did, maybe Jacob as well. And in essence, what Jamie was able to do was to organize and get biologists, virologists to actually do the viral challenge experiments. And we're now in a position to report on the first findings of the cell culture and the electron microscopy. And I guess all I can say is if you're a virologist, it may be time to start looking for another job because this should be, it probably won't be, but it should be the final nails in the coffin of the pseudoscience called virology, as we clearly demonstrate over and over again that, in fact, virology is a pseudoscience. It's not based on scientific principles. And when you do proper scientific experiments, you show that there is no evidence that any particle called a virus actually exists. So next week, I will have Jamie on our show, and we're going to also help try to fundraise for the final part of his control experiments. Again, this is basically taking up the experiments that we laid out in the viral challenge and finally getting them done and getting them done properly. And we are not surprised with the results that show that there's no evidence for this creature called a virus. So tune in to Alex's show. It's on the Way Forward. And next week, we're going to have Jamie on my Wednesday webinar. And so we'll be going over this so everybody is very clear and sees the evidence for themselves. And hopefully, it gets disseminated far and wide. And hopefully, we will be getting many of the doctors who have criticized this to finally admit that, in fact, they are incorrect. So today I wanted to switch subjects a little bit, and there was no particular reason for getting into this today, except I thought it would be interesting given that we're essentially resurrecting or renewing or redoing or Taking another look at the experiments that our good friend Stefan Lenka did with his control experiments. That's really what's happening with Jamie Andrews. He had written a paper maybe 3-4 years ago. We'll put it into the show notes so everybody can look at it themselves. And I would definitely encourage everybody to read this paper themselves. But I thought this is a paper that is hugely important for the entire thinking about science and biology and life and water. And I thought partly to honor Stefan and also partly to put this paper in the public record. In other words, even though this may end up being a little tedious for you, I'm going to read a good part of the paper and, of course, make some comments along the way. And I thought about it, trying to do it in a different way, summarize it or synthesize it or something. But it was so clear and it was really difficult for me to figure out what to leave out. And it's such an important piece of work in trying to understand where life comes from. And the role of water in life, and just a whole new understanding of biological processes. And I think this talk is going to be part of the new biology curriculum. So in other words, it's going to be something that every new biology practitioner is going to have to understand the role of water and the role of what's Stefan calls pie water. That's not a name that he made up. And just to say, because with everything there's always a lot of criticism, is that all the control experiments and is scientifically valid, and this is obviously not a complete picture here. And so no, not all the experiments were done, but sometimes it's important to start with a kind of a model or an understanding to guide the experiments. And so there's obviously a lot of unanswered questions, and that doesn't mean that Stefan or the people who are researching pie water got everything correct. I'm sure that they didn't. But it gives us a place to start to think about a new way of understanding life and what the role of water is in life. And just to understand biology in a actual realistic and correct way. So with that introduction, I'm going to basically read many of the sections from this paper. Again, I hope it's not too tedious for you. I think it's very well written, interesting, and I'll make a few comments along the way. So if I can share my screen, and then I bring up the article and make it a little bigger. So the title is Understanding Water, Recognizing Life, Pie Water, More Than Just Energized H2O. Interesting. Now we're even talking about why we think that water is not H2O. But anyways, and it was by our friend, Dr. Stefan Lenka. So in 1964, this professor began to clarify the question of what the plant does to turn a bud into either a leaf or a flower. He suspected a material cause, a hormone that the plant produces. His reasoning was that if the plant did not produce the suspected hormone florigen or did not produce it at that point, the bud would automatically become a leaf. The suspected hormone has not been found to this date. What the professor discovered was that the tissue flower at the bud changed when it became a flower. The fluid became measurably more energetic, which was repeated at the plant sites whenever a bud became a flower. He found that the energy content and composition of the flower-forming tissue fluid of plants is similar to the tissue fluid of humans. So the first thing I want to say about this is is that this is the kind of thing that I think should be studied in biology and even in medicine. In other words, there is an observation in the plant world that there's buds, and they apparently either can become leaves or flowers. And so the question that this professor wanted to find out was, what determines whether this bud becomes a leaf or a flower? Is there a material substance, i.e. a plant hormone or some chemical that the plant makes that directs this fork in the road and determines the direction that the bud will take? Or is it something else? And I would say also, to their credit, because this is different, we today in most biology and medicine are so wedded to the material chemical causes of everything that happens in living systems, which is itself just a theory. In other words, we're a biochemistry set. And so that everything that happens must be connected with chemicals. But apparently, because they couldn't find the hormone, just wanted to make sure there wasn't something about this. Because they couldn't find the hormone, they actually moved on and started investigating other aspects of the plant. And in this case, they looked at the tissue fluid of the plants and found that there might be answers in that, and that these tissue fluids actually have an interesting similarity with tissue fluids in human beings. So then the professor, along with somebody, another doctor, tried to find out how the plant achieves this energy gain. In other words, that the fluid at the bud became more energized. And maybe we'll hear later how they assess this energy gain. He found out that the plant uses certain minerals for this purpose and recognized these consist of two different charged forms of iron. They succeeded in copying the process and applying it technically. To do this, they use certain iron compounds and molecules that make up proteins. They combine these different compounds to form a complex that becomes active by itself in water and enriches the water with energy. This makes it possible to measurably energize any water. They were able to demonstrate the energy gain using two physical techniques. They called the water that was energetically enriched with this technique pie water. Extensive experiments were carried out with the water in agriculture, medicine, and technology. So here we find out that they're saying, or Stefan is saying, that they're going to tell us about the way they measure the energy of this water and to demonstrate the energy gain, and that they were able to recreate this energy gain by mixing water with some iron and some other compounds that were from molecules that make up proteins. So it will be very interesting to see, how do they measure this energy gain? How are they able to prove that that's true? So the documented success of the increase in productivity, quality, health, and performance enhancement are more than astonishing. So here you get into, similar to Dolph Zantiga's experiments, they were able to demonstrate, they say, and maybe we'll hear how they were able to do this, that when different organisms, people, plants, etc., were exposed to this water, their health and their quality of the plant and their performance actually increased. So now, if that can be measured, you have something that you know, well, this has a biological effect, and then you have to try to tease out how and why that happened. But they were faced with a puzzle. They had no explanation, could not come up with a theory as to where the measurable energy increase came from and how the enormous increase in quantity and quality in agriculture, health, and other technical performance improvements can be explained by the use of this water. They consequently assumed an unknown form of cosmic energy as the source of the proven energy increase. In the end, they were right because the energy in pie water comes from the sun and from the cosmos. But in science, they lost credibility and interest because of it, etc. So let's move on a little bit. Because then he moves on to the work of a biologist, Dr. Augustine, who recognized in this light, the pie mechanism was recognized as an essential process in the materialization of biological life from water. So that's a big claim there. He's saying that this energetic increase in the water, which they're going to tell us how they discovered this, actually has a lot to do with the materialization, which is to say the coming into being of biological life forces from water. So here we're as far away from minerals and DNA and DNA coding life and various RNA and various things like that. We're talking about energy and water and life. So then how can the pie water effect be explained? Discovery in 1986 by Augustine explains the increase in the energy of the pie water. He recognized that the membrane, which forms the surface tension on the water, is rich in energy and has the basic properties of life. It contracts and expands again, i.e. grows. Dr. Augustine recognized this with the help of a simple measuring device, the Leonard frame, with which the rupture tension of the surface membrane can be measured. Measurements and knowledge of the surface tension of water are crucial for many technical applications. He recognized that the thin membrane contracts with strong force. It expands again by itself when water is made available to it for this purpose. He then recognized that the surface tension membrane consists of a different substance than liquid water. Only fat-soluble substances dissolve in it, whereas only water-soluble substances dissolve in liquid water. So here, basically, he's saying water creates a surface tension. Maybe if it, particularly if it has these iron compounds and certain molecules in it, and that the membrane that creates the surface tension is actually fat soluble, and it's different than the bulk water. So those of you who've been following along with the water are starting to think this is a different phase, a different kind of water. Very much like the fourth phase of water that Gerald Pollack talks about. But here, the difference or the addition maybe is that this surface tension membrane, A, is fat soluble, which is a huge point to be made, and B, that using this experimental Leonard frame, you can show that it expands and contracts depending on the water put into the system. So then by determining the density, the quotient of mass and volume, he found that the substance has a density of 1.4 kilograms per liter. Liquid water has the greatest density of just under 1 kilogram per liter at 4 degrees Celsius. So again, this is a demonstration that by looking at the density of the water, that this is not liquid water. It is a different phase of water, and it has different properties, and particularly its ability to expand and contract. By weighing the mass and determining the volume, he found that the living tissue always has a significantly higher density than liquid water. So here we now start measuring the density of living tissue. And interestingly, I think what they're saying is they found that the density of the living tissue matches perfectly, or at least very closely, to this surface tension water density and not to liquid water. So here we're starting to get the idea that we're actually not made of liquid water. We're made of this fat-soluble or fat-dissolving, higher-density, different kind of water, which eventually came to be called pie water. So this is a huge revelation for science. So then he says, to demonstrate that, he found that the high density of living tissue does not result from the fact that more minerals or other substances are dissolved in the tissue. He determined the density of pumpkin seeds germinating in distilled water. So there he removed the minerals to be able to rule out that it's the minerals in the water that create this different density. In other words, the minerals in our tissue create this different density of the living water. So that's not the case because there's no minerals in distilled water, and found that before germination, they're clearly lighter than water and therefore float. At the moment of germination, they have a density of 1.4 kilograms per liter. From this, he concluded that this dense substance that makes up the surface membrane accumulates in the germ. In the germ, the living tissue. So then he goes on about the physics of this. And so just to skip down a little bit. So the evidence that water transforms into this dense and thus energy-rich substance under pressure, the gain in energy in the pie water process can be explained. Through the germination experiments and the high density thus achieved, the assumption is confirmed that the substance that makes up the surface tension membrane is the same substance that water transforms into through high pressure. Surface tension can be increased by dissolving suitable substances or by creating the substance that makes up the membrane of surface tension. However, the iron complex discovered in the plant does not release substances that can increase surface tension because the pie process does not exhaust itself and is detectable even with small amounts of the particular iron protein complex. This explains the energy gain in pie water generation by the mechanism of surface generation postulated by the doctor. In addition to movement of all kinds, it was especially turbulence, the rhythmical movement of the proteins that accomplished the release of the dense energy-rich substances. So in other words, it is through the movement, especially the rhythmical movement of the proteins in the water, that causes the release of this dense energy-rich substance. In other words, the transformation of liquid water into this fat-soluble energy-rich substance that we call, that he's calling pie water, that is, as he's saying, the energy source, which we'll get into a little bit, for the creation of biological life. The next paragraph talks about this happens in all living beings with bacteria, fungi, protozoa, non-protozoa. It doesn't, of course, happen in viruses because they don't exist, but everything besides that. And then the importance of iron. You can see that whenever iron is present, these complexes and water are present, the building of energy and life is released. So in other words, in order to have the creation of life, you have to have these iron complexes and water, and then some sort of energy input from the outside, which I think is the sun. And that will transform the water into this fat-soluble, high-density water that stores a lot of energy and that eventually gives rise to all the different life forms through various complex processes. So water and its dense substance emerge from it and turns back into water when releasing energy has been able, also been able to, proven to absorb, store, and release information of all kinds. There is now also a concrete idea that everything is connected to everything else, also the processes of consciousness, feeling, and perhaps even thinking. So now you're getting the idea that it's the water that absorbs the information from the cosmos, the sun, and the other, you know, starry beings and other things in the cosmic world, and from thoughts and feelings and consciousness and thinking. And this is the information that is essentially put into the water, and that in under the influence or in conjunction with these iron-rich compounds and maybe some other molecules, it can turn this information into information in this dense fat-soluble substance. And that is the essentially the beginning of the creation of life. So he talks about the relation of Schauberger and also a guy named Bruno Gröning. And this was understood by Mesmer, as a description of energy and healing. He says, interestingly, it's clear to me that the tangible healing current is the flow of dense substance in tissues and nerves, which Chinese philosophy and medicine call qi. In other words, Stefan is postulating here, and he thinks he can demonstrate this, that this dense substance and that the energy that it's carrying is actually what is flowing in the tissues and nerves. And that was what the Chinese medicine called qi. Okay, now, so then we get into the fourth phase of water, and people all know about this, that we can see that this is very similar to the findings of Gilbert Ling and Gerald Pollack, who I've talked about many times. Again, the layer is fat-soluble, and it displaces polar water-soluble substances. He called it the exclusion zone. It has more energy than liquid water. It may be concluded that this substance is identical to the substance of the thin membrane of the surface tension of water and the viscous substance that can be produced by pressure and the viscous substances that tissues and cells consist of. Depending on the energy content of the water, this layer and thus the surface tension of the water is of various thickness. This can be used to explain that water has different energy contents regardless of the temperature and substances dissolved in it. We also have very concrete evidence of this surface tension. I don't know if there's pictures that he shows here, but you can see bugs walking on the water. And maybe that has something to do with it, with the story of walking on the water, is the recognition that the formation of the of life itself comes about through this special transformed, energy-rich, fat-soluble surface membrane water. That is essentially where the creation of life comes from. So then he says, it follows that all techniques that move water, especially those that form vortices, enrich the liquid water with the substance of the surface membrane, thus making it richer in energy, i.e. energizing it. The saying, movement is life, takes on a deeper meaning through this perspective. Wherever life moves or is moved, water comes into contact with surfaces or by flowing and forming vortices, creates inner surfaces and thus energetic surface substance with which biological life forms, moves, and grows. So this is probably one of the most important chapters and principles, that whether it's talking about the vortex of the fluid in our bodies that is created by the heart, and the vortices that we make when we do the primal movement exercises with Pat, of all the joint fluids. You could say that insofar as you're making vortex-based movements of your muscles and of your joints and of the blood itself, and you're keeping the vortex movement in the nerves and tissues, that you're creating this energy-rich water, and that is the foundation of what we call health. And as soon as the water starts to lose this vortex, as soon as the vortexes are lost, this happens like in congestive heart failure, so the water becomes bulk water. We see this in tumors. We see this on MRIs, with that the water is no longer in this energized viscous state, but is becoming just liquid water. That is essentially the essence of what we call disease. And this is exactly what was being treated in Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine and the traditional ways of looking at medicine. Okay. Moving on. Let me just check one second here. Okay. Okay, what is this primordial substance? I have proposed that the term elementary substance, because the doctor's arguments are convincing that all elements that exist emerge from this substance. It's an interesting point of view. More in the aspect of element formation in a future post, which I haven't seen. But I favor Dr. Augustine's view that this substance is a substance in its own right, from which biological life is formed, and provide arguments and references below that strengthen his view. Then he goes over the work of Harold Hillman, which we all know about, which is looking at, attempting to look at living things, but the water has been excluded, and particularly this pie water. So you will never have any realistic or accurate picture of what living structures have look like or are or made of through these type of images. And we've all heard that a lot. Just see here. So he goes on, my assumption that cells and tissues consist of this dense substance. In other words, this dense, fatty phase of water substance is what living beings consist of. And it explained better the observed properties and performance of bacteria, cells, tissues, hormones, blood, lymph, nerves, and brain. Its assumption also provides an explanation as to why lung tissue itself only engages in fat metabolism and does not supply itself with carbohydrates. In order to be able to optimally absorb the elementary substance found in the air in bubble form. We talked about this in the talk about, it's not that we breathe oxygen and that the lungs, and particularly the alveoli, are essentially the most specific, maybe concentrated form of these little fatty bubbles. It's basically all surface tension, and that allows them to absorb the charged particles directly from the air, which are itself a form of water or ether or something like that. So this, as he says, this fat-soluble condenses into mist when cooled and into the liquid water of the droplets of rain when energy is released, and this happened. The assumption that tissues and cells consist of the elementary substance is explained by further observations, properties and composition of amoebas and tardigrades and of many organisms that can grow up to several meters with no cells. In them, the nuclei and oxygen-breathing bacteria, the mitochondria, float freely in a viscous substance. Cells are only formed for special purposes, for example, sexual reproduction. And there's a very well known example of this. And I have a sense, even though I obviously can't prove this, that that's very similar to what happens in all organisms, that we're basically made of these dense, fatty substance, surface membrane, water, tissue, and the cells are only formed at the periphery and for special purposes like red blood cells and egg cells maybe and sperm cells. That we are not made of cells, we are made of this surface tension, fatty water. So you can all read about this again on your own. But let me skip down a little bit here. Let me just check my notes here. Broadening the view. So Dr. Augustine's findings made it comprehensible where the energy of the iron complex, which is released in the Pi process, come from. It follows that exactly the same thing happens in the red blood cells, since here too an iron complex is active in the same way. From this and other observations and experiments, it may be concluded that the main task of the nerves is the transport of the dense and energy-rich elementary substance. This leads to another primary task of the brain, the central reception, control, and distribution of the flow of the energy-rich elementary substance through the brain. The presence and different distribution of the dense elementary substance is in turn the basis for specific signals to arise in the brain, which are due to dense and less dense compositions of the brain matrix. And here he gets into how you can see certain things that are happening in the body based on looking at actual x-rays or CT scans of the brain. But the important point here is that essentially we're breathing in from the outside, not oxygen, but precursors or things that help the formation of this energy-rich surface area substance that makes up our lungs. This is passed over into the red blood cells, which distributes this energy-rich substance throughout the tissues. And the nerves are not carrying electricity so particularly, although that's one part of it. They are electric, but they're mainly, according to this way of looking at it, and you could say that the electrical impulses are a sort of a offshoot of this dense substance. So we're talking about the distribution of this energy-rich elementary substance through the nervous system, including the brain. And so then you move on, and once you start getting the hang of this, you can understand that it follows that one optimally supports and promotes one's body and oneself by being exposed to this Pi water, drinking it, bathing in it, using it for all kinds of things, and that human settlements have always congregated around these types of spring waters. They often contained iron. So it even explains a little bit the toxicity of iron, where there's too little liquid water and the enzymes are not fat soluble. So then he talks about how there is a company out of Germany, I think connection with Japan, that has been making this. And there is actually a website that you can get this Monoway Pi water. They have essentially a apparatus that it was developed based on these principles of iron-rich substances and vortices and electromagnetism that can make this water. I've never seen it, but I'm very interested in checking it out. Although my sense is that this is there are many different ways of making this pie water, and I'm not saying that one has to use this particular company, this Monoway pie water. They've been in particular interested in this particular way of making or of helping form this water. You could see some little diagrams of it. My guess is that anytime you're engaging the water with certain minerals and there's some iron in it, and you're putting things through a vortex and you're stirring it with wands and putting it through like the Maya water vortex thing that I use, or the copper pipes that create vortices in the water. Anytime you're doing that, you're increasing the pi water content and energizing your water, hopefully leading to more energized tissue and better health and function for you or your plants or your animals or anything else that needs more energy, which is basically the reason we get sick. As we run out of energy, our charge gets low and we become a dead battery. So bottom line, let me just read the summary here. The idea that everything that exists in nature is animate exists in every culture. Water always plays the essential role. Our culture is currently dominated by the idea that only cells are alive and everything else, even the tissues in which cells live, is inanimate. A primordial cell, according to the theory, came into being by chance after molecules had been created by chance over a long period of time and come together. All cells would have emerged from the primordial cell. Organisms would develop from cells, and the water in the cells is just a solvent for the many molecules that cause metabolism. Metabolism, according to the theory, brings forth, sustains, and multiplies the life of the cells. All substances outside the cells are considered lifeless, and if they enter the metabolism, are part of life for a time. So that's basically a summary of the standard way we're taught about how life develops and the primary importance of the cells. So two discoveries enable a significant expansion of this view, namely that everything that exists is connected. Water gives rise to a previously overlooked or misinterpreted substance that itself possesses the basic properties of life. Contraction, growth, and information absorption, storage, processing, and release. And it has been technically possible to produce this energy-rich substance. So in other words, this is not cells, it's not minerals, it's not random compounds, it's not things bumping into each other. It's the information downloaded into the water that creates all the processes that we associated with life: contraction, growth, information storage, information usage, releasing the information, etc. All this happens in this very special water that we know about now. In the fringes of water, this substance is formed, which is quite different than liquid water. There is evidence that all the elements and molecules found in water, earth, stars, and biology are created in this substance. The Greek word for edge is pi. The Japanese discoverers of the process of how nature and biology energizes water referred to the energized water as pi water. The German explorer referred to the elementary substance that arises from water, from which life is made and derives its primary energy, as something primary matter of life. In Sumerian language, pi means life energy. The discovery of the elementary substance and the processes of how life produces this substance from water enables new ideas about life, how life materializes out of water, and that everything that exists is connected and interacts energetically, spiritually, and materially. And as I said, there's still a lot of sussing out of this way of looking at it, and a lot of research and a lot of checking and a lot of experiments to confirm that basically life arises out of this special fourth phase of water. That is the, it is the energized substance which animates all living things and creates the energy that we use for life, and is actually the creative principle in life. And so I look forward to a time where we stop studying the old biology and start really looking into, in all the various ways, the new biology of life, which is based on water and downloading the electromagnetic energy from the cosmos and finding out what we can understand about the real dynamics of life. So again, I hope everybody takes a look at this entire article. I know it was a little bit long there, but I just wanted to put this into the, at least our record, in the public record, and also to honor Stefan's contribution to this, and so people can really think about what kind of water they're being exposed to and the various ways of energizing water and vortexing water, and how your body is doing that, and how the way you move and the way you walk and the shoes you may wear or not wear, hopefully, and the way you think and your feelings and everything that's connected in life has to do with organizing your water into this very special material, which is the foundation of life. Okay, I think I'm going to stop there, and I will, again, next week we're going to put another final nail into the dying carcass of virology by actually doing the experiments that they refused to do and showing how they, the amazing results that they come up with. So I hope everybody tunes in for that. And you can also check that out on the way forward. And with that, I will see you all next week. Thanks for joining me.